Hi folks, hope all is well. This is Jim Carl, welcoming you to Bantercast, the latest podcast from the team behind the Banter series of public talks and events. It's been a couple of months since we last spoke, and we've been massively busy with events at festivals up and down Ireland, including Bloom, Beach Iron, The Big Grill, Ballymnoo Litfest, and that's just the ones beginning with B. Culture Night and Castlepalooza take care of the ones beginning with C. We'll bring you highlights from all of these events over the coming weeks and months. We begin our autumn-winter series with a fascinating conversation about bees. Erin Tilikan from the All-Ireland Pollinator Plan joined us at Bloom to talk about how one third of Ireland's bee species are threatened with extinction because we've reduced where they can nest and the amount of food our landscape provides for them. Erin outlined the efforts being made by the All-Ireland Pollinator Plan to ensure bees can survive and thrive. Funding for implementation of this plan has been provided by Bord Bia and the Heritage Council. Hi folks, welcome along to the final day of Bloom 2016, the final day of the Banter tent here with the amazing grassy furniture. But we start off today with the bees. And this here is Dr. Erin Tilikan. She is from the All-Ireland Pollinator Plan. And last year we were scheduled to have a talk on bees, but unfortunately the tent blew down. So that was the end of that talk. But today the tent, don't worry, there was a couple of concerned looks in the audience about tents blowing down. The tent will not blow down today. I guarantee you that wouldn't happen. Erin, tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us a bit about your background before we start talking about the Pollinator Plan.
Sure. So my name is Erin, and I'm the project officer for the All-Ireland Pollinator Plan, as Jim said. My background is I came from, you can probably tell, not Ireland originally. So I'm from Philadelphia, and I did my general degree in biology. But I was always interested in the environment and in ecology. I started to study plants and insects and how they relate to one another. And then I came over to Ireland to study pollinators specifically. So I was looking at wild pollinators, the wild bees that are in Ireland, the native bees, and how they're doing, why they might be experiencing some declines, and what be causing that as well.
Right, and like, is there some reason why you picked Ireland? I mean, you know, like, is Ireland known for kind of like wild bees and pollinators?
Yeah, Ireland is actually way ahead of the game in terms of pollination research. They do some really great work here. So the UK in general, but Ireland really is kind of leading the way in a lot of the different areas, especially invasive species and pollinators. So these invasive plants, they come, they invade, and a lot of times we think that is a really negative thing, but some of them have a lot of flowers. And so I was wondering, are there some pollinators that actually benefit from when invasive species come in? And I was looking at rhododendron, so maybe something that a lot of people are familiar with from growing in their gardens. But rhododendron is actually invasive as well. And this is a little bit of a tangent, but it's really interesting, so I'll just bring it up quickly, is that rhododendron has toxins in its nectar. And these toxins don't impact all pollinators in the same way. So pollinators drink nectar for sugar. They need it for carbohydrates. So they go out, they find the nectar, they drink it. It gives them the energy to be able to fly around and do what they need to do.
So it's like Red Bull for bees.
It's like Red Bull for bees. Exactly, yeah.
Sorry, I'll be saying things like that to make it work in my own head.
Absolutely. So it's like Red Bull for bees, but this Red Bull, it has different impacts. So actually, Red Bull has caffeine, right?
Yes.
That's the same kind of toxin that can be in plant nectar. So it's these secondary compounds that plants make. And caffeine is a perfect example. But the one that's in rhododendron is rhodotoxin, they call it, actually. And it's called granotoxin, really. It actually is really detrimental for honeybees. But bumblebees will feed on rhododendron all day long. So that was what I was studying, is what's going on with that? Why does that happen?
Okay, and how can the bees themselves differentiate between the two? I mean, is there a kind of do not touch sign for kind of honeybees when it comes to this particular kind of toxins?
That's where we noticed it. We saw that honeybees, they weren't actually feeding on the rhododendron at all, but we'd see bumblebees feeding on it all the time. So we were like, well, why aren't honeybees feeding on it? So we actually tried to give it to some honeybees, and we found that they die within a couple hours of eating even the smallest dose. And actually, honeybees have this really amazing capacity to tell each other where they should eat and where they shouldn't eat. So what plants are good and what plants are bad. And they do this crazy thing called a waggle dance.
This is their equivalent to kind of like a WhatsApp group.
It is like a WhatsApp group, yeah. And what they do is they dance around in a figure eight when they get back to the hive. And that tells the other bees what direction to fly in relation to the sun. And it tells them how far, the distance that the flowers they need to visit are. So honeybees can communicate where to fly to, and then I suppose where not to fly to based on not directing their bees towards this toxic rhodendron plant.
Wow, that's an incredible communication tool. You know,
it is.
Okay, so like that's how the honeybees kind of communicate where to go to get the good stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm going back to the bumblebees again. Yeah. At what stage do you reckon the bumblebees discovered by hitting up the rhodendrons, hitting up that particular patch, they would get all the kind of caffeine they'd need?
Well, they don't get caffeine; they get this granatoxin. Yeah. Yeah, and I don't think granatoxin has. We don't know if it has any benefits to the bees or not. I think that they're just visiting it for the sugar, to be honest. It's just a really good source of nectar. Rhododendron makes tons of nectar. So the bumblebees, they just have no problem with it. Whatever happens, and we didn't figure out why, but they either can metabolize it or it just doesn't affect them. This toxin doesn't impact them the same way it does impact honeybees. But I suppose it comes back to this idea of why are our pollinators doing poorly? And why are some pollinators doing better than others? And how can we help all of them? And that's kind of what I was looking at during my PhD.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So then, after you finished your PhD, you decided you settled here in Ireland. Yeah. Or the lure of Ireland kind of took you away from Philadelphia.
That's it.
So like, talk to us a little bit about you've started working with the All-Ireland Pollinator Plan earlier this year. What were you doing between the PhD finishing and then?
Oh, yeah. I was working at Athlone Institute of Technology on a postdoc. So it's just a one-year research project looking at, it's going to sound a little random, but it was looking at water and pharmaceutical contamination of water. And I suppose the connection is like these small amounts of chemicals in different kinds of water. So you can study small amounts of chemicals in nectar or small amounts of chemicals in the water that we drink. So it's kind of related in that way.
Okay. So talk to us a little bit then about the All-Ireland Pollinator Plan. Mm. Because, I first heard about it via a colleague of yours, Una Fitzpatrick. And that's where it kind of came to my mind. So how many people are involved? And I suppose give us the pitch on what it is.
Yeah, a little bit of background. So I suppose pollinators are in trouble in Ireland. We know that out of the 98 bee species that we have here, 1/3 of them are threatened with extinction. So that's quite a huge amount. I mean, when you think about all of our bee species, 1/3 of them doing pretty poorly.
Okay, so let's pause it there. Yeah. So first of all, you said 98 different species.
Yeah.
So that may be news to people because it's I myself didn't realize until I read up on this that there were that many.
Yeah.
So it's like when you say 98 different species, are some more plentiful than others?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So I think when people think about bees, they mostly think about the honeybee, which is a managed pollinator, right? We keep it with beekeepers. They're looking after the bees. They're helping them. They provide homes for them. And then we get honey from them. But we have wild bees, too, in Ireland. So we have one honeybee, and then we have 97 wild bee species. And I like to break those into two groups in my head. There's 20 different types of bumblebee, which was news to me when I started studying them. I thought there was probably just one or two. But there's 20 different types of bumblebee in Ireland. And then we have 77 solitary bees. So these are bees that don't live in big colonies like the bumblebee or the honeybee. They live on their own, and every female reproduces on her own. So it's different than the colony where you have the queen who does all the reproducing and then workers that do all the work. So solitary bees are really interesting
okay.
as well.
Okay, leave the 77 solitary bees alone for a second.
Yeah.
Go back to 20 bumblebees.
Yeah.
What differentiates each particular class? Is it like humans in terms of just families, or are there distinguishing marks, distinguishing characteristics?
Absolutely. You can tell by the way they look. So we look at the patterns on the bumblebees to tell one type from another. So there are ginger bees that are just this lovely ginger color. There's the black and yellow bee that's probably a little bit more familiar to all of us. There's a few different types of that. But essentially, it's the color of the tail that you look at first. So we have white-tailed, red-tailed, blonde-tailed, and ginger-tailed
okay.
species.
Brilliant. So of that 97 different varieties, then you say a lot of them are threatened with extinction. What's causing them to die off?
It's a good question. Really good question. What were you going to say? Did you have a suggestion?
No, the minute you said good question, I said, I'm going to shut up right now.
Okay. Yeah, so I suppose we do know a lot about what's causing the bees to decline, which is good news. So there's been a lot of research done on this. And experts agree that although there's quite a few things contributing to it, it's not just one thing. At large, it's because there's not enough food for our pollinators in the landscape anymore. So if you think about what the landscape looks like now compared to maybe 20 or 30 years ago, there's a lot less flowering grasslands. There's a lot less wildflowers. We tend to tidy things up maybe a little bit more nowadays, and we keep the grass mown really, really short.
Yeah.
And that just kind of takes the food away that bees would usually feed from. So I guess this is a good point as well to point out that bees aren't the only pollinators, but they're the best pollinators in Ireland because they feed their young only on pollen. So they are completely focused on going to flowers, picking up pollen, bringing it back, and being able to raise their young from
right,
it.
Okay.
So,
okay. So let's talk a bit about what you said there. The fact that the food for bees is going down. We've had kind of a couple of interesting conversations about farming here at Bantra Bloom over the last couple of days with John Fagan from County Westmead and also with Darren McCulloch from the Ear to the Ground. You know, and they're also kind of pointing out that there are changes afoot from an EU point of view. The EU had the REP scheme for rural environmental protection, and they're also bringing in GLOS right now. You know, do you think that makes a difference? Or is it the case of the uptake has to be in a different kind of way?
I think that does make a difference, I think that can be a really good way to help pollinators and to get some measures in there that'll be really helpful. Because, I mean, it's unrealistic to say to farmers, like, go and plant these great wildflower strips. If they cost money, they need to be reimbursed for that. Like, there needs to be a system like that in place. Yeah. So I do see a lot of future there. I think we're not doing it quite yet, but that's one of the things we're aiming to do during the pollinator plan, is to get that kind of measure in place so that we can help farmers to be able to help pollinators.
Okay. Getting back then to the pollinator plan, you know, so, like, I mean, when I paused there, Ron, we were talking about the species of bees.
Yeah.
So, like, talk to me about, like, I mean, the actual practical things you're doing. I seem to remember a presentation Una did, that one of the plans she had was to plant loads of kind of flowers and kind of pollen-bearing plants along the motorways.
Absolutely. That's a great one. So in Northern Ireland, they're doing something called Don't Mow, Let It Grow, which is exactly that idea. If you can let the flowers grow in the margins on the motorways and on the roadways, that connects the whole entire country up. So it provides this fantastic habitat. And it can also help us by not having to mow as much, which might save a little bit of money in the long term. It's more complicated than you might think, though. Not everyone likes the way that looks. And you have to educate people as to why we're letting the grass grow a little bit long. And also to let people know we're not going to let it grow long forever. It does get cut. It just gets cut slightly later than we're used to. So instead of keeping it really short, it sort of grows during the summer and then gets taken away as hay or haylage. So it's complicated, though. You know, you'd think it's super easy, but it just takes a little bit of coordination to get the proper equipment out there and make sure that it's feasible and practical for the councils and for the transport authorities.
Yeah.
But they've all been doing a great job, and they really have been supporting us.
Okay.
I suppose the pollinator plan, though, I never really answered your question about where it came from.
we did kind of a waggle dance and diverged away from it.
We did. So the pollinator plan, as you said, started with Dr. Una Fitzpatrick down at the Biodiversity Data Center. And she's the chair of the plan. And she said, you know what, we need something in place. She and Jane Stout at Trinity College, they both have been studying pollinators for decades in Ireland. And they said, we need to help our native pollinators. What are we going to do? So the pollinator plan, essentially, it's a framework. It's a collective call to action where everybody who has some control over some land can come together and maybe manage it just slightly differently so that Ireland's a place where pollinators can survive and thrive. So the ultimate goal of it is just to make our land a little bit more hospitable for pollinators.
Okay, so aside from the motorway plan, Erin, what are the other kind of, like, I suppose, practical implications and practical parts of the plan?
Absolutely. So one that I want to highlight is what local communities can do. So we've had great uptake from Tidy Towns groups so far, for example. So we've had groups that are planting pollinator-friendly plants in their environment, and they're doing it at low cost, maybe from root divisions or cuttings. So we had one group that took willow and just did a whole bunch of hardwood cuttings, and they've made this huge willow plantation, which is a super important early spring resource for bees. So that was great. I suppose there's sort of two main things you can do. You can either not mow as much and let natural native plants to Ireland grow a bit more, or you can purposely plant ornamental or horticultural species that are good for pollinators. And those are just plants that make a lot of nectar and pollen. And I see you have foxglove over there. That's actually a very good one.
Okay, so aside from foxglove, what else should people be thinking of planting if they want to support pollinators?
Yeah, absolutely. We actually have a guideline on our website that lists a whole bunch of different types of plants. So if you're interested, just Google Irish Pollinator Plan, and we have a guideline for local communities that talks all about the different kinds of plants you can put in. Myself, when I moved to a new apartment, I didn't have a lot of outdoor space. So if you're in that situation, or even if you have a lot of space, I'd recommend pollinator-friendly pots and window boxes. So I did thyme, oregano, rosemary, lavender. Bees love lavender.
Yeah, but, oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah. My biggest recommendation is just go to your garden center when you're buying your plants and see what bees are already feeding on, because they'll pick the plants out for you. That's what I did. Like, they were all on the lavender and they were on the catmint. So I was like, grand, I'll bring those home.
Yeah, they love lavender. I mean, I know that in my own garden. Like, we have a huge lavender bush, and they're just kind of, they're flocking to it, you know. So getting back then, I suppose, to the kind of thing that they probably arrested an awful lot of people who are listening to this, is they kind of like the idea of the number of species dying off.
Yeah.
So let's start with kind of, like, I suppose, why are people interested in bees? I mean, this kind of thing fascinates me, because as long as we've been doing kind of like this banter at Bloom Session, people are saying, okay, we want to hear more about the bees. You know, it's something that, like, people are really interested in. Do you think it comes down to, like, the popularity of programs or films like The Bee Movie, or is it something else?
I think it does have to do with that. We've always had this notion of, like, the busy bee, the worker bee that's doing a great job in our gardens. I think people just have a good feeling about bees, and they want to see them do well. So I think that has a large part to do with it. I think you're right. The Bee Movie definitely helps, things like that. They fascinate us. We're very interested with them. And I think it's because their biology is amazing. I mean, the things that they do, that waggle dance is incredible.
Yeah.
You know, bumblebees amaze me too. The queen bumblebee comes out of hibernation in the springtime, maybe March, April, May. And she has to fly around. She's, you know, starved from hibernating. She has to find 6,000 flowers a day to be able to start her own colony, which to me is just remarkable. Like, that's a ton. And if you think about your own landscape, like, if you think about your garden or the countryside in March, like where I live, if I had to stay within about 1 kilometer of my house, which is what bumblebees have to do, I think I'd find it really hard to find 6,000 flowers in that space.
So she's got to find 6,000 flowers in the space of 24 hours within 1 kilometer of her hive.
Yep.
She must be knackered. I mean, I'm just trying to think of like even just walking around that distance for some people. But to come back with kind of like that much pollen as well.
That's it, yep. And the reason she needs that many flowers is because she has to stay really warm. Bumblebees, just like kind of like birds, when they lay eggs, they sit on the eggs and they have to keep them up to temperature. And Irish March weather is not always the nicest, so they have to keep this temperature relatively high in these little underground or just slightly above ground, maybe in a grassy patch nests. And so to generate the amount of heat, they buzz. They kind of do that buzzing frequency that you'd hear when bumblebees fly by. And they do that so often that it just burns up so much energy. That's why they need 6,000 flowers.
Is it the same kind of process then, like with the honeybees in Erin? You know, do they like does Queen Bee similarly as busy at the very very start?
Honeybees are really interesting. So a thing that I didn't know about bumble versus honeybees is that honeybees live for many, many years, so that colony will continue on if it's healthy. And a queen can live, I'm not a honeybee expert now, but I think a queen can live more than 10 years, to be honest. Like, they can keep going and going if the conditions are right. A bumblebee queen only lives 1 year. So bumblebee colonies are annual. So if you find a bumblebee colony, it'll be gone by next spring. Like, it won't come back again. And so that's the big difference between them, I suppose.
Yeah. Yep. Well, one of the other reasons why people would be quite interested in bees as well is that they, like, if you go down to your local shop and over the last 5 or 6 years, you will definitely have noticed the price of honey increasing. Not just the local honey, even kind of like, I mean, even in a supermarket's own brand, the price of honey is increasing. Is that something you've kind of noticed why people are more interested in kind of, I suppose, the pollinator plan as well? Because it stands to reason that if there are more bees around, if there are more kind of like colonies around, therefore there's more honey around. And if there's more honey around, the laws of supply and demand dictate the price might come down.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And people are more and more interested in honey as we try and cut, you know, refined sugar out of our diet. This is a really nice natural sweetener. So I think you're right. That does draw a lot of people's attention to the plan. And one whole section of the plan is focused on managed bees, which would be our honeybees, and supporting our beekeepers and making sure that we have the things in place that they need to keep healthy colonies alive and thriving. Mm.
What's been the input and the reaction from beekeepers and the commercial beekeepers to your plan?
Oh, they've been great. I mean, really, they have. In both the North and the South, we've had a lot of support from beekeepers. And, you know, there's such an important part to this. I think it's important to remember our wild pollinators, because we don't often think about our wild flowers that need pollination. I think we often think about our crop plants. And it's absolutely 100% true that honeybees are essential for crop pollination. Probably not as much in Ireland, but internationally. And just generally, you know, our honeybees are doing a lot of great work. We need them to pollinate our plants. But our wild pollinators are also important. And I think we've had great reactions from both the honeybee keeping societies as well as sort of people supporting the wild bees too.
Yeah. I'm curious as well, like, I mean, what are the kind of like the success and the targets of the pollinator plan? I mean, if it's a plan, there must be outputs. And if there's outputs, there's obviously kind of things you're measured against. So I'm curious because, I mean, on the one hand, obviously the most obvious result will be if all these species come back, or if the existing species continue to thrive.
Yeah.
But like, what are the results from your point of view?
I suppose ultimately, like, if we're talking big picture goals, we want to stop the loss of our pollinators. So we want to see a reverse in that trend. And in order to be able to see that, we have to be measuring it, right? Which is kind of a tricky thing because bees are flying all over our landscape. So how do you measure how many of them there are and how they're doing and how different species are doing? And for that, we actually have a great situation in Ireland. Ireland, about 4 or 5 years ago, established the bumblebee monitoring scheme. So this is a citizen science project. Anyone, including anyone in the audience or yourself, could get involved if you wanted to. You can learn to identify your bumblebees, which really isn't as hard as it sounds. Like, there's 20 species, but you probably are only likely to see 6 or 7 in most areas in the country. So you can get them down pretty quickly. And once you learn the different types of bumblebee, once a month, from March to October, you walk a transect, maybe 1 or 2 kilometers, takes about an hour, and you tell us what bumblebees you see. And then over time, that builds up a great amount of information about how many bumblebees are flying in our landscape, how they're reacting to change. And the really great thing is that now that we have 4 or 5 years of good, solid information, we can see what happens after the pollinator plan's been implemented. So we'd hope to see a complete increase in different species and different areas where things are happening. So that would be one way. I suppose the other thing that we want to do, and the other way that you can measure success, is in the amount of habitat that's created. So are people planting putting more pollinator-friendly flowers? Are they mowing less? Are we seeing more flower-rich habitat in areas where bees can nest in our landscape? And for that, we have a mapping system online the public can log into. It's about to be launched this summer, so it's not ready yet, but it's coming. And you can go on, if you've done something in your garden, whether it just be like me, small window box, or if you've made a whole wildflower meadow that's, you know, a whole acre of your land, you can go in and log that. And then we can see a buildup in the pollinator habitats across Ireland over time. So that's going to be a really useful tool in telling us, like, where should we be doing more? Where can people coordinate their efforts? That kind of thing.
Yeah. I'm curious as well, and last couple of questions here, and I really appreciate you coming along on Bank Holiday Monday as well.
Worries.
You say you're based in Waterford, in the centre.
Yeah.
What other kind of organisations are based down there? What other kind of, wildlife observations are going on there?
Absolutely. So the organisation that I work for is the National Biodiversity Data Centre.
National Biodiversity Data Centre.
Yeah, right. It's a mouthful. But the data centre has a really important role. So basically, it's charged, it's a organization, a national organization, that collects information and manages information on our wildlife in Ireland. So not just pollinators, but pollinators are a part of it. It looks at mammals and marine life, and it tries to track all that and see how all of our species are doing in relation to different changes in the environment. I suppose that's a really important role that they're playing down there, and that's where the schemes that I'm talking about come out of, and the data center is coordinating the implementation of the pollinator plan. Okay. So that's what's down in Waterford.
Okay, great, excellent. Listen, I really appreciate you coming along for your time. It's a subject we really wanted to cover at Banter, so very happy you're coming along. Please give a big round of applause for Dr. Aidan Tarnican.
Thanks very much.
Many thanks to Aaron for taking the time to join us at Banter, and thanks to Roz, Jimmy, Declan and all at Borbia for their help with Banter at Bloom. This podcast was produced by Banter series producer Tanya White. You can check out thisisbanter.com for news of our website Banter, plus you can also listen back to all the Bantercasts to date. We'll be back next week with another podcast. Until then, goodbye and take care.